Welcome to Doom. This episode, we go back to 1964, taking you back to Avengers number 7, some of the top shows and TV shows in 1964. Number 5, The Fugitive. Number 4, Andy Griffith Show. Gomer Pyle, Bewitched, and the number 1 show of the 1964-1965 season, Bonanza. Also on TV was Dick Van Dyke Show. I just like saying that, Dick Van Dyke. We'll be back with the show after these messages, and stay tuned.
Do you love comics? Does your life insanity depend on comics? Do you sit at work and daydream about Marvel, DC, Image, Dell, Fawcett, Gold Key, Valiant, Fantagraphics, and all the rest? Are you the kind of person who wishes you could escape all responsibilities, crawl deep inside a long box, and thrill to the sequential art stories from the Golden Age to the present? Superman to Cerebus, Captain America to Watchmen, Sandman to Archie? Then come on up to the attic, the Comic Book Attic, the show devoted to comic book news, reviews, reflections, and history, with an emphasis on comics of days gone by. In the attic, you'll find me, Mike Pindell, talking about whatever floats my four-color boat. The Comic Book Attic, your path to comic book nirvana. But don't take my word for it. Just ask my wife.
Mostly this would be marketed to, you know, the girls in the 60s who squeal and all of their clothes match and their hair is always perfectly coiffed.
Anyway, it's a fun show. So duck the rafters, beware the cobwebs, and join me in the Comic Book Attic at comicbookattic.libsyn.com. What's in your attic?
Welcome to Doom Party, people. This is Timmy Doom, your host. Today's episode, we're going to review Avengers number 7 from August 1964. Before we do that, I want to take you back to that time by trying to get you in the mood. And by doing that, I'm going to talk about the top 5 pop songs of that era, August 1964. Number 5, Where Did I Love Go? The Supremes. Okay, this is a timeless song. It's classic. Everybody loves it. I don't love the Supremes. I'm not really a Motown guy. I like Stevie Wonder and Marvin Gaye. It's not my bag, really. The songs get on my nerves, and it reminds me of that little baby boomer generation. And when they were yuppies in the 80s, basically the movie The Big Chill, that's what the songs like that remind me of, that generation, like yearning for those songs in that time. I never dug it, but you know, they had their little, Motown had their little thing. That was back in the days when people dressed up in suits and choreographed and had real talent. I admit those were, you know, even Diana Ross, even though people might say she might not have a Whitney Houston type voice or anything, or Aretha Franklin type voice, which I think Aretha Franklin is annoying. Personally, her singing is annoying. Diana Ross does, in my opinion, have a good voice. I remember I bought an album by an artist called L.B. Shore, who had a couple of hit albums in the late 80s, and it was a horrible album by L.B. Shore. It was his second album. And I was excited to listen to it, and it sucked. And he had one song where he did a duet with Diana Ross, who I didn't think was a strong singer up to that point. And she blew him away in that song. So that's when I noticed that, yes, she does have talent. She knows how to use her voice well. She has a nice, silky voice. I like it. But, yeah, again, quote-unquote real music. Everybody knows these artists. If you look at artists in the 80s and 90s, if I read off some of these pop charts from the 90s, there's going to be a lot of one-hit wonders and crap music. People saying, why did I listen to that? This chart, I don't think they can say that. I think they can actually say these are classic songs. And people who say back in the days, the 70s and before the 70s, 60s, 50s, 40s, the 30s and the 20s, that was real music. They might have a point. Number four, Everybody Loves Somebody by Dean Martin. The man can sing. I listened to the song just to bone up for this, you know, just to do a little research for this list. And he could really sing. It's, of course, it's a well-crafted song. And that song had been, I think it was 1949. Since it was written in 1949. And a bunch of people did covers of it. And it never really, including Frank Sinatra did a cover of it, but it never really like took off and exploded until Dean Martin did it in 1964, and it became synonymous with Dean Martin. He even sang it and made it the theme song of his variety show back in the days. That was the days when everybody had a variety show. Every celebrity had one, you know. Even fucking Bobby Goldsboro, who was a one-hit wonder. Well, he wasn't a one-hit wonder, but he sucked. That's why you don't know who I'm talking about when I say Bobby Goldsboro. He had a lot of smarmy, syrupy hits in the 60s. And like I said, you don't know who he is, but even he had a variety show based on his couple of hits that he had in the 60s. Number three song of August 1st, 1964, was The Little Old Lady from Pasadena by Jan and Dean. And, okay, that's like a Beach Boy type of song. Not my bag. But I remember there was a TV movie. The one I remember about Jan and Dean is that TV movie called Dead Man's Curve. And I don't know, it just made it, I don't know, it creeped me out as a kid because I know something happened to one of them. I think it was Jan, and I never, you know, I knew something about a car accident, and the movie just scared me, even though I didn't really watch it. But looking and researching, yeah, Jan and Dean sang about hot rods, about the same, some of the same stuff that the Beach Boys did in their same style, and they sang about, you know, mostly about cars. They sang about hot rod cars and speeding. And they must have really lived that lifestyle, because Jan was in a near fatal car accident that left him partially paralyzed, aphasic, which means it's kind of like you react slowly, your motor senses are slower reacting, basically like he was a stroke victim after this car accident. And, you know, he made a comeback in 1981, and that's part of the movie, I think, where, yeah, he made the comeback. He came back. Yeah, he came back very slow. I mean, yeah, I'm glad he lived and everything. But why are you trying to make it like he bounced right back? He didn't bounce back. Okay, it was several years later he finally was able to get back on stage, and it's not like he was, you know, all those years from that car accident on, all those years that he missed out on a lot of fucking, a lot of hot rod speed racing and concert tours, going out and fucking groupies because he wanted the speed. And actually, I don't know the circumstances of the car accident, so I'm just going to move on. I lived in Pasadena for a while when I first moved up here, and they sing about the little old lady from Pasadena, and they mentioned real landmarks in Pasadena. I thought that was interesting. Number two, Ragdoll by The Four Seasons. The Four Seasons is a group headed by Frankie Valli, and he's a man who sounds like somebody squeezed his nuts and twisted real hard, and that's how he sings. That's how his voice sounds. Very high octave. That's an okay song, I guess. And of course, number one, August 64, The Beatles, In a Hard Day's Night. The Beatles. Okay, now let's get on. Now that you are in, you know, what era we're talking about, and you got a picture of the era. Picture Jack Kirby's cover of Avengers number 7 with Thor wielding the mighty Thor wielding his hammer, swinging around, and he's attacking the rest of the Avengers: Wasp, Ant-Man, Iron Man, Captain America, and Rick Jones. What the fuck? Okay, which one of these kids don't belong here? Rick Jones is in a sweater looking like Mr. Rogers with a little shirt and tie, like a little punk-ass bitch in the background, swinging his arm high like he's going to fight Thor. Wrong answer, kids. Of course, the Avengers was Stan Lee's, and everybody tried to say that Stan Lee is not the writer of these early, the real creator or writer of these early Marvel comics. They say Jack Kirby did everything. But the true believers know better, right? Excelsior. That's right, Stan. All right. Yeah. So, yeah, this is the answer. This is Stan Lee's answer to the Justice League of America, whatever that DC corny group was. This is the real super team here. And why is Thor attacking the Avengers? It's called their darkest hour. Okay, and the reason why he's attacking them is we can see under him three figures, the Executioner, the Enchantress, and Baron Zemo. They're behind this. And Baron Zemo, the way I don't like the composition of this picture, I like the composition at the top where Thor is about to face the Avengers, but I don't like the bottom where the bad guys are like underneath Thor and they're like got the witch hands out like they're casting a spell on Thor. But the reason I don't like it is because Baron Zemo is up under Thor's crotch, you know, with his fingers splayed, like he is like in awe of Thor's mighty package. First page, okay, of course it was 12 cents. That's the comic book, 12 cents comic book price, and that is what comic books should be priced even today. And I shouldn't even say even today, because these comics, reading this story was far more entertaining than the comics of today. Their stories are way less worth than 12 cents in the comic books that you read today. Okay, as Peter Rios, the great pioneer of comic book podcasting, Peter Rios once said, what did he say? Oh yeah, he bought a modern comic, you know, I guess it was a 90s, it was a current 2000s. I don't know what the comic book was, but he said it took him 2 minutes to read because that's what they do. They probably rely so much on art and it's just a flurry of pictures, and you know how much comic books cost, $3. Fuck you, comic book people. Don't pay more than 25 cents for a comic or just download it. Open the first page. Their Darkest Hour is the title, and in true Stan Lee fashion, everything is described. Let me read it. Featuring the combined menace of the exquisite Enchantress, the evil Executioner, and the diabolical Dr. Zemo. Magnificently written by Stan Lee. Majestically illustrated by Jack Kirby. Masterfully inked by Chick Stone, and meticulously lettered by Art Simek. And here, this first page is kind of a court session, kind of a, you know, we see Thor, and you've seen Green Lantern like this many times, standing with, you know, his hands out in a stance, feet out in the stance with his hands behind his back, head down, bowed a little, standing in judgment of the rest of the Avengers, like Green Lantern stands in judgment or used to stand in judgment of the Watchers all the time, or whatever you call those little blue men. So Thor is pointing at Iron Man and he says, Iron Man, you chose to ignore a call from us 6 days ago. How do you explain that deed? And Thor's pointing his hammer at Iron Man. If I was Iron Man, I would say, point that hammer somewhere else, partner. And Giant Man, who is in giant form for some reason, even though they are in the Avengers mansion, and there's no explanation, no reason why he should be a giant form right now, he says, better speak up, mister. We're all waiting. Okay, Hank, shut up, punk. Okay, you punk-ass bitch. How dare you talk to me, Tony Stark, like that? But see, that's part of the problem here. They don't know he's Tony Stark. He is facing punishment by the rest of the group for not heeding a call from the rest of the Avengers. And if you're looking for a real detailed explanation of that, there's an asterisk in a box, an editor's note box at the bottom. It says, "See Iron Man number 56 by the editor." And they need those boxes back, okay? So Thor says he has no defense. He allowed a personal problem to affect his sense of duty, and that is why he did not answer the call from the rest of Avengers. And of course, Captain America, who is like the father figure, is like the wise guy, the wise man, everybody loves him. He puts his hand on Iron Man's shoulder and says, "We are pledged not to pry into each other's personal lives. Yet, if there is something we can do, Iron Man says, "No, there's nothing you can do." And, Rick tries to talk to him. And what should have happened after that, after Rick talked, was Iron Man backs handing him and Thor telling Rick to mind his own business. A child should be seen and not heard. Because he has no say in this, he should have no say in this group. I guess Rick Jones is supposed to represent the kid readers, and I hate when they do that. We don't need any representation of the audience that your target audience. We don't need a representation of that. Okay, so they reach a decision of what they're going to do about Iron Man ignoring the call. And they say, "Thor, you tell him the sentence." Thor says that Iron Man is suspended from Avengers activity and duties for a period of 1 week. Okay, so we were about to die. And I don't know what the situation was in that Iron Man issue. But they might have been a life and death situation. And he ignored them with no explanation. And all you get is a week suspension. Okay, now you see why the Avengers, the original lineup, ended up where they ended up a few years ago, called Disassembled. Anyway, Iron Man is thinking to himself, "You know what, I deserve this because, though I can't tell them, I had almost foolishly decided to quit the Avengers because of my injured heart. But they must never know that I am really Tony Stark, whose life hangs by a thread." Okay, and if you saw the Iron Man movie, you know what the problem with his heart is, and you know his is connected to that machine. To you know, he's not just an Iron Man, but he's connected to machines. Technology doesn't just enhance his strength; it enables him to live. His machines that he's built, and this is also a problem. And a point in my favor or my argument against the Avengers not knowing each other's secret identities. Of course they must know their secret identities so stuff like this won't happen. Why is Tony being reprimanded when he has a life-threatening injury? And they need to know if KC has like a heart attack or something happens to him in the middle of battle. Wouldn't it be nice if Captain America or Hank Pym knew that so they can like help him? It's stupid to have secret identities in a super group of superheroes. It's dumb. It's counterproductive. Okay, now we go up to what you call it, Asgard, where Thor is from, and Odin is punishing Enchantress and the Executioner for some shenanigans that they were up to. And if you want to know in detail what shenanigans they were up to, go read Journey of Mystery number 103, says the editor. Again, we need editor's notes. I like this. Now you got the Avengers comic book with a couple of heroes, Thor and Iron Man, but you have to go to their respective comics to get some of the other backstory that you don't need to get this story. I didn't need those backstories to read and understand this story. But it fills out the Marvel universe and the Marvel mythos if to say, okay, there's more to these characters than meets the eye. Go back to Journey and Mystery and check it out. Go back to Iron Man number 56 and check it out. I didn't know Iron Man was up to number 56 by this time in 1964. Oh, that's pretty good. Okay, because I thought he was in Tales of Suspense for many years before Iron Man, but for him that as early as 1964 to have 56 issues of his own comic, that's pretty good. Okay, so Thor banishes Enchantress and Executioner to Earth, and we see that Loki was the reason why he had a hand in the shenanigans that they were up to, but he is not punished because nobody knows. Oh, and we see Enchantress and Executioner walking across that rainbow bridge that brings them to Earth, and they hit Earth. And they don't decide to just, like, you know, walk up in a field where nobody is at and, you know, go get a job somewhere. Or they don't decide to go in some back alley so they don't make a scene. No, they walk and find themselves in the middle of a busy New York street dressed like rejects from Star Trek 1966. And a cop comes up to Executioner, who, let's say, they have, even though they've been banished, their powers weren't taken away, or not totally. They're like depowered half or three quarters of what they used to be, but they still have superpowers. And a cop is coming up to the Executioner, all up in Executioner's face like cops do. Look, Mac, how you and your lady friend dress in public is your business, so long as you don't break the law. But when you start interfering with traffic around here, and Executioner is getting up in the cop's face, he's like twice the cop's size, and he's like, "What, you dare speak to me like that?" Enchantress tells him to back off, and just let's learn the custom of Earth. Let's just obey their little cop laws, so we can, you know, not have no trouble here. So we can get ourselves together. Then a whole bunch of people start surrounding them and pointing at them. Executioner doesn't like that, so he just zaps his fingers, and like they start scattering. The people start scattering. And the cop was talking much shit before, but for some reason he doesn't approach the executioner now that he saw that executioner like zap these people with some bolts from his fingers. Now, that's another part of the story. Why would Odin, okay, banish these people to Earth and not take away all of their powers if they really did something that was going to like destroy his kingdom and try to kill? And they were trying to set Thor up in Journey of Mystery number 56. And yet, okay, they're dangerous. They're going to have to be punished. But he sends them to Earth with all their powers. Yeah. Okay. That's like sending somebody to prison, but still giving them, you know, privileges, like watching as much TV as they want, having phones and TVs in their cells. Basically, it's like sending the kid to his room with everything. You know, you would never send people to prison, let them have all those. Oh, wait a minute. We do send people to prison. They do have TVs and things in their cells and whatever technology they want. Well, anyway, they're trying to, instead of reforming themselves, Enchantress and Executioner want to get even with Thor and all the other superheroes who's affiliated with him. And they see a newspaper on the ground and has Baron Zemo on there, and it says, "Leader of the Masters of Evil escapes. Zemo flees the country." And it talks about how he's the enemy of the Avengers. And the Enchantress is thinking, hey, maybe we should hook up with him. Which, okay, they have powers. Okay, superpowers like Superman. Why do they want to hook up with Zemo? Okay, and not only on top of that, they're very arrogant, Enchantress and Executioner. So why do they want to hook up with somebody like Zemo? Now, here's a scene I like. Captain America is just having a little workout. And what he chooses to do working out is to, like, hire a bunch of wrestlers from, a wrestling federation, giant dudes, to come and just beat him up or try to beat him up. And that's his workout. Okay, like, six big guys. And one of the guys, I don't know who this is, the managers of the wrestlers or somebody, he's like a captain. Cap is like, "You sure these are the toughest wrestlers you got?" Okay, that's burn number one. And the manager says, mister, you'll know it when the ambulance comes for you. And if that's how you want it, then he sicks the wrestlers on Captain America. And Captain America starts to promptly, like, whoop on them. They start, like, attacking, jumping at him and bumping into each other. He's like Spider-Man jumping around. And he says, all right, boys, I'm paying for this, so give me my money's worth. Let's see some action. And, of course, they slam into each other, trying to slam into him. And he says, put a little more muscle into it, gentlemen. The enemies I'm liable to meet are in the future aren't apt to go so easy on me. And the wrestler's like, okay, that's how you want it. They jump on him. He starts jumping around like a monkey, flipping him around. And he says, Captain America said, you know what? I stay still long enough for you to grab me. Now act like you mean it. And one guy grabs his shoulders, the other one grabs his legs, and Captain America curls his body up like a baby and causes those two guys to slam into each other head first. And basically he's like having a kind of jabs and barbs like Spider-Man would, except, you know, this ain't a Spider-Man dialogue. He's fucking with him like Spider-Man would, but he's doing it more in a Captain America way. This is strictly a Captain American character where he's not trying to, like, taunt them. He's just like a army sergeant. Come on, give it to me rougher. I like it rough. And it's also, to me, set this scene and another scene in here sets up the Captain America in Civil War. And that's why the first issue of Civil War was so great, when Captain America put the smackdown on S.H.I.E.L.D. agents and escaped from a helicarrier that was probably like was thousands of feet above the earth, and he didn't have a plane or anything, but he still escaped. He just jumped out a window and escaped. And after he beat the hell out of a bunch of S.H.I.E.L.D. agents who all have rifles, and all he had was a shield, that Captain America is this Captain America. Okay, and that is why Civil War was such a Marvel Civil War was such a success. Because it started off with Marvel characters being Marvel characters and Captain America being this is why everybody fell in love with Captain America. This kind of shit, he beats the shit out of wrestlers and he says, thanks fella, same time tomorrow. And of course they decline. They don't care how much money he's offering them. And he goes back to his room, Captain America, and he has a little, he's reading some kind of book. And he's probably looking at some memoirs because he's thinking of Bucky. He says, all my training, all my skill, and still I was unable to save Bucky years ago. So he's still fucking, that's still fucking with his mind. Then somebody who looks like Bucky is walking in Bucky's outfit and Bucky's mask. It's that poser, that lame character. Rick Jones, and he says, say Cap, look what I just found tucked away in one of the closet. And he's dressed like Bucky. And he said, ain't this the outfit your ex-partner Bucky used to wear? Look how it fits me. Anyone would think that I'm your partner. Captain America has with his mask off, he's Steve Rogers. And he's sitting there looking stunned. Okay? And he ain't saying shit. And Rick Jones, that poser, says, Cap, what's wrong? Why are you looking at me that way? And Cap says, take it off. I told you never to wear it. But Cap, what's bugging you? I didn't do anything. I didn't know you'd get so angry. I said, take it off. And don't you ever call yourself my partner again. I lost my partner. And I'll never forgive myself for letting it happen. And he snatches the mask off Rick Jones' face. And it shouldn't have been a snatch. It should have been a pimp slap. And tells Bucky to keep stepping and get the fuck out. Do you think I could bear it? If anything happened to you, I'll never have another partner. I'll never be responsible for another life. Never. Okay, this whole scene to me was very gay, very soap opera-like. From, and more than soap opera-like, very disturbing. From Rick Jones walking in on Bucky's old outfit. Remind me of like a lover, a woman dressing a man, walking in with in the outfit of a man's, her man's dead lover from the past, and she's like, oh, I can wear Sandra's outfit, and it still fits me just like it fit her, your dead wife. And then the husband getting upset. This is very disturbing, very scary. And why would Rick Jones, this is why Rick Jones is a dweeb who should have been killed off. Jim Wilson shouldn't have been killed off. It should have been Rick Jones. He should have been killed off a long time ago. This punk is saying, ain't this the outfit that your partner ex Bucky used to wear? I mean, your ex-partner Bucky used to wear? Okay, bitch, you know his partner's dead, and he has it's a bone of contention with him, to say the least, but yet you sit there going to wear the outfit and brag and try to be the new boy in his in Captain America's life. It's very disturbing. Okay, Captain America starts thinking to himself, and he blames Zemo for the Bucky's death. Okay, what happened years ago. Meanwhile, speaking of Zemo, he's on his island. He's like, he's running an island full of brown people. Okay, it looks like a bunch of Hawaiians or something, a tribe. And he's like punking them, telling them what to do. That's when, oh yeah, he goes into his little private room where he has trunks full of coins and treasure and gold. And that's when the entrenchers and executioners show up. And he starts attacking them right off. He said, you ain't gonna get my treasure. And she lets him know what she's there for. She wants to team up with him to destroy the Avengers, including Captain America. And he's like, yeah, let's do it. This is a good time to take a break. It's 1964 on Doom.
Coca-Cola, Coca-Cola, things go better with Coca-Cola, things go better with Coke. Life is much more fun when you're refreshed.
And Coke refreshes you best.
It's the refreshingest.
Food goes better with, fun goes better with, you go better with Coke.
The real life one puts extra fun in you and everything you do. So things go better with Coca-Cola. Things go better with Coke.
He's a sulky, over-funky,
kinda hunky superhero.
Hot, consistent, and electrically transistored superhero. An exotically neurotic
and aquatic superhero.
The Marvel superheroes have arrived. Super-powered from the forehead to the toes. Watch them change their very shape before your nose. The arcane striking superhero changed to fighting superhero. Dingin' real swinging shield flinging superhero. They're the latest, they're the greatest, ultimate superhero. The Marvel superheroes have arrived.
Back at the Avengers mansion, Pussy whipped Hank Pym and his wife's about to go off, you know, on a trip. Thor, he's doing his thing. He goes off and see it. He got some other things to take care of, probably as Donald Blake. But since he won't tell his secret identity, no one there would know that. This guy shows up. This guy looking like a Nazi criminal. Everybody takes off except for Rick and Captain America. This Nazi guy shows up. He said he used to work with the Red Skull. Captain America's about to kick his ass when he says, no, dude, don't kick my ass, Captain America. I came just to let you know I know where Zemo's at, you know, and I want to make up for it by telling you where Zemo's at and all the other, and I want to turn myself in. And Captain America pushes him to the side, gets the information from him, and takes off, starts running. Okay, that's some real hatred right there. Where's Zemo? A word? Pushing them down and start running. And of course, we find out that it's not a Nazi, old Nazi criminal who told Captain America where to find Nemo, but the executioner in disguise. Meanwhile, Thor is here, is being enchanted and being hypnotized to a penthouse on the Upper East Side, and that penthouse belongs to the Enchantress. In which she hypnotizes him, give him a roofie, a drink with a roofie in it, and he falls asleep, and she convinces him. She puts in his mind nightmares in which the Avengers are evil people, and she's convincing him that they've been evil this whole time, and they're going to destroy the world, and he's the only one who can save the world by destroying the Avengers. Captain America finds Nemo. Now here's the badass Captain America. This is some badass shit here. This is Mark Miller captured this Captain America so well and brought it to Civil War, at least that first issue. Well, Captain America jumps out of a plane over Nemo's island in a parachute. Okay, they send up a bomb with gas to take him out, and he wraps himself up in the parachute to shield him from the fumes of the gas bomb. Then he breaks out of it just as he's coming above the treetops and uses his shield to crash into a cluster of trees, and he lands safe on the ground. Then the bunch of native tribes who have some kind of laser, Kirby-like laser machine guns, start firing at him right away. He throws a shield at him, busts him up. He just butt beats the shit out of him, okay? And then he finally falls into one of Baron Zemo's traps, okay, in the ground. He has one of those underground pits that he falls into. And back in New York, there's another badass action scene. Thor called, radioed Hank and Wanda, who were going on vacation, to come back to the Avengers mansion because there's an emergency. They're coming back in the helicopter. Thor is ready to ambush them and throws his hammer into the fucking helicopter and tears it apart. Of course, Hank sees this ahead of time, orders his wife to jump out. She flies out. He jumps out and becomes a giant. He makes himself over 40 feet high, which to me, he's a lot bigger than that, because he's like gripping the roof of an apartment building. Okay, like he's the first half of the upper half of his torso is covering the top roof of this apartment building, and this is why they need the Superhero Registration Act. It's also why Damage Control is making raking up money, dollars, because Hank, when he fell on the roof, he crushed the first two floors or the top two floors of the building, and if there's anybody in there, they're dead. See, that's why they had the series The Boys. That's why they need The Boys from Garth Ennis. Read that comic book from Dynamite Comics to take care of shit like this when superheroes, because Hank don't even think another thought about it after he destroyed this building, some other people, or at least the top two floors of the building. That's called reckless endangerment of society. Okay, Superhero Registration Act is the right idea. Okay, Thor is coming up on Giant Man fast. And I like this. See, I like these little things here. Like, even though Hank turned big really fast, he says, "I saved myself by becoming 40 feet high, but I've overextended myself, and that makes him too weak. He's too big, too fast, and that makes him too weak in that size." Even though he's 40 feet tall, yeah, right, 40 feet. I say 80 feet tall. He's still nowhere near as strong as Thor, okay? He's just all mass, but not muscle. And Thor is about to smash his ass with a hammer, and I like how they have Hank flip out the way of it. Now, why... Now, this is why they have also Joe Quesada's no smoking policy in the Marvel Universe, this next scene. Tony Stark is at home recharging his heart. Now, he's got a cable coming out of his chest plate because he's got on regular jeans, and the only thing he's got on as a top is this chest plate. That means back in the days, that means that his chest plate never came off. He always had his whole chest plate, like, not the sleeve, the yellow sleeve, but the red chest plate over his back and his front stayed on, or else he was going to die. There's a cable coming out of it, and he is plugged in the wall right next to the TV. He's sitting up on his chair, plugging it into the wall. And he said, it looked like a regular outlet socket. Like, he could just plug his heart in to recharge his heart. Okay, so he's recharging his life giving chest device as he watches a TV show at home when that is interrupted by a news bulletin that Thor is kicking an Avengers ass, okay? And while he's watching this on TV, he's having to smoke a drag. Yeah, that's not, you got a heart problem, serious heart condition, and you taking a drag off a cigarette. Nice work, Tony. And Tony says, you know, I got to go into action. Becomes Iron Man to go help his friends who are getting their ass kicked. Hank is like, Hank is giant as hell. And he's like, he's got his hands on like both, one hand on one roof of one building and his hand on the roof of another building, like holding himself up so he won't fall. Thor swinging his hammer about to fuck Hank up. The Wasp diverts Thor's attention for a little while until Iron Man shows up and uses his repulsor, or his magnetic repulsor, to like spin Thor around. And you know, the Enchantress and the Executioner, they're loving it. Meanwhile, Captain America climbs out of the pit that he fell into and puts some more smackdown on Zemo's troops. Zemo troop gets their asses beat. Okay, I like this. They try to attack him with one of these Vibra gun, which is a Kirbyized futuristic cannon of sorts. Of course, Captain America beats their ass, gets their Vibra gun, and starts blasting them, and rocks and shit start flying up at the people. And he destroys everything. He destroys this giant hut on this island that Zemo had his men construct. Okay, never mind the fact that there might be people up in there. And Captain America sees that Zemo is trying to escape because all his men got their ass kicked. And he jumps on this escape pod, Zemo's escape pod, and he's hanging on for a ride. Meanwhile, back in New York, that repulsor ray shit ain't gonna work for long for Thor. I mean, for Iron Man. And Thor takes his hammer, tosses it at Iron Man. Iron Man is trying to stall by saying, "Why, Thor? Why are you fighting us?" And before Thor can answer, Giant Man grabs Thor and holds him up like Thor's a baby. That's how small he is. But he still is no match for Thor's hammer. Thor calls his hammer to him, a Mjolnir, and starts swinging and breaks out of his grip. And I like that, you know, Hank, even though he's much bigger, his strength is no match for Thor. And that was see, if this was DC Universe at the time, just because you're bigger, you would have been stronger, you know. Unless you're that giant gorilla that used to fight Superman. Okay, now, Iron Man figures out the way to... He figures, okay, Thor must be under some kind of hypnotic spell. And he blasts him with a ray of light. He's blinded by the light, like Man for Man band used to say. And Thor wakes up like, "Iron Man, what are you doing here? Is it a week already?" Okay. That's called a blackout for real. So, Enchantress and Executioner, they're dressed in like normal 60s or just normal gear, you know. The Executioner is wearing a turtleneck. He's got that fucked up, like, I don't know, he's a balding man, but he's got these fucked up hair lines on the side of his head, and that mixed with his, he looks like a wrestler, a wrestler nowadays. He's got jeans and a turtleneck on, and of course she's got like some tight striped pants on. Okay. And she's like, "We gotta, you know," they're upset that Thor broke out of his spell, and she admits to herself that she's in love with Thor, blah blah blah. And somehow Zemo, he wanted to escape Captain America's wrath, so he got Captain America attached to his ship, and he decided to fly to the Avengers mansion get the rest of Avengers to help kick his ass. That's a dumb move. And plus, how he gets to the island so fast, from the island to New York so quickly. Then a whole bunch of mayhem ensues. Captain America does the move that he did. I think Miller read these early Avengers before he wrote Civil War. Captain America slams his shield through the glass of Zemo's escape pod ship. Why he did that when he first took off on the island, why didn't he do that then? I don't know. Okay, this is this Jack Kirby comic is pretty good, man. I can see this is better than the DC comics of the 70s. I understand why, you know, people put Jack Kirby on the pedestal, because I think this is the first comics of this kind of action. Of course, it's old to us now, but he opened up a whole new Marvel universe, a whole new comic book universe. If it was for him, superhero comics may not be as popular as they are today. So I could definitely say that. But now, like, Captain America's about to beat the crud out of Zemo. That's when Executioner comes up behind Captain America and just squeezes his shoulder. That's it. Just squeezes his shoulder and Captain America's out. Okay, why didn't they just have somebody like the Executioner and Enchantress kill, like, everybody? Because, you know, they can't kill Thor, probably, but I don't understand that.
Why?
Captain America's way out of his class here. Okay, and he's like a baby in Executioner's arms. So, now check this out. Oh, and this is weird. He's carrying Captain America, all right? But they decide to get in the ship, okay? They get in Zemo's ship, and I don't understand how he had Captain America in his hands, and now they're in the ship with the unconscious Zemo, and they take off to try to escape the Avengers and Thor. And Thor, I don't know how he knew who was in this ship. I don't know how he knew what was going on. But he said he causes a space warp to envelope the ship and send it to another dimension. Luckily, even though Captain America was being dragged into the ship by Executioner, he's now not on the ship. He's laying unconscious on the rooftop where he was. So, okay, there's a gap there. But if you're a kid reading this, the action in the story would take you out of it. You know, the Avengers get together and they vow that they will find the bad guys when they come back to Earth. And Avengers assemble, blah, blah, blah. I got to give this comic... I like this. It was a pretty good story. It's great. It's Jack Kirby art. Before he got too out of hand with that kind of artwork that he did in 2001 where everybody had super blockheads. Yeah, I give this a thumbs up. Avengers number 7. Would I give it an 8? Yeah, an 8 from a scale of 1 to 10. That's what I give it. And hope you enjoyed that review. Have any questions or comments on this episode, go to doomcast.blogspot.com, post a comment, or send an email to blackpun2000@yahoo.com.